Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. Hello, this is Todd Perry, and welcome to PPM Simplifies. We have a really interesting podcast lined up for you today. We have our guest, Mr. Michael Ellison, engineer out of Birmingham, Alabama. He runs our Birmingham office. Michael, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Todd. I hope you're doing good.
Man, it is good. And we have a really cool project. We're going to geek out a little bit today on PPM Simplifies. We're going to talk about remediation systems. We're going to talk about how to optimize remediation systems and, through, observations and operations and maintenance. And we're going to take a deep dive today, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll get down in the weeds a little bit, but not too much.
It'll be fun, man. And we couldn't have a better fella on here. Michael is a preeminent expert on remediation and has performed through his career really countless. I would say well over a few hundred remediations and lots of different techniques. And I guess that's the first place we'll start, Michael. No matter what technique you're using, as you go into the field with it, one size doesn't fit all, and you got to pay attention to how your site's responding to it to figure out how to get the biggest bang for the buck. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, Todd, that's a very fair statement. And, what we typically try to do, there's two basic areas that we really focus on once we're in the process of site remediation. That is the equipment that's being used. And we'll talk about, two more commonly used remediation systems here in a little bit. But the equipment and also the site conditions, and how is this equipment affecting your site conditions? So just at a high level introduction right here off the top, just how you care and you maintain your equipment. Is it functioning as intended or maybe better? And really not just looking at it as something in a box or, under a roof over here, but each individual component that plays a critical role in the success of that system operation. And then if everything's good in that basic area, how's the site responding? How is the system affecting the subsurface? Is this helping you get closer to your site objectives with each effectiveness monitoring event? Is there areas of the site that need more attention than others? Typically we see that over time. One area may clean up a little faster. Well, then we need to adapt and attack the residual impact that remains. And then just always being flexible and able to change as needed to maintain a high level of efficiency. So just two rudimentary areas, from a high view of kind of how we go about site cleanup.
Well, that's so important because, not all sites are the same. Sites have, common threat things, but each site may have unique geology, unique groundwater, unique chemistry. I mean, there's a lot of things for our listeners out there. Maybe let's go start there. What all things in a general sense, what all forces could affect a remediation approach?
Oh yeah, we could list several of those, but typically at the point of remediation, you hopefully have a very good feel for what's happening at the site. Sometimes that's not always the case because you can't make a thesis project out of it. You've got to get in there and assess the subsurface, make a good estimate on, the site conditions, how they're going to perform. We'll just talk about, just one of the commonly used remediation approaches with dual phase vacuum extraction system. So, going into it, you have a pretty good feel of what the formation is going to produce, not just from a groundwater movement situation, but also from how much air you can get through there. So once you get your equipment on site, hopefully it's appropriately sized, what we'll typically do is have a safety factor in there. We'll oversize the equipment a little bit just to make sure we can adapt for any unexpected changes. So as you have a general idea of how the system should function, you're going to watch that closely, especially in the first several days of system operation, to make sure that, just basic things like, is everything connected appropriately? Do you have any leaks in the line? You know, sometimes things can happen during the install. You want to make sure everything's buttoned up nice and tight. Is the equipment functioning like it should? You know, sometimes we'll go as far as, you know, routinely checking the amperage on some of these motors just to make sure they're in the right operating parameters. How's the airflow moving? Can we isolate specific locations of the site and see with hydrocarbons, for example, which area of the site is producing the largest hydrocarbon recovery from an air standpoint and also from a groundwater standpoint? Making sure everything is in good shape as the system starts to age a little bit. Evaluating your motors, taking good readings. That's something that I can't emphasize enough. You know, you can be accurate, but not precise. You can be precise, but not accurate. Our goal is to be accurate and precise. So it's highly important. Our guys, when they go in the field, they know what to look for from pressure, airflow, water recovery. We keep detailed notes on our iPads where they can flip back and see how it was functioning during the last visit. It is so important that the data that they collect is correct. And then our project managers will look that over and we'll make adjustments as needed based on how the system's functioning, right? So then you get to the point where you start looking at what's happening in your subsurface. You may be on a semi-annual monitoring period, triennial, quarterly, whatever. Does the actual data reflect what we perceive is happening in the subsurface? Most of the time it will, but when it doesn't, we have to take a closer look at that and see, okay, well, why isn't this area cleaning up as good as it could be? All right, we'll do everything that we possibly can, system related, but sometimes maybe there was missed mass in the subsurface. You know, that's going to happen from time to time. There was just a hot pocket of material there that we were not expecting. So we make adjustments. Sometimes we will add another recovery well, or sometimes we'll increase the vacuum in a certain area. So it really just depends on how things unfold. But the key is the system always has to be functioning at optimal performance. And we have to look at everything real time when we're in the field to make sure that it is doing what it is intended to do. The groundwater data is going to typically drive what we're doing, but we can't always wait till that quarterly event or that triennial event. We want to be looking at it real time and making adjustments on the fly.
You know, and that is so well said. And as you think about it, you know, we think about an in situ system like vacuum extraction, dual phase vacuum extraction, ozone, air sparge. Those require balancing and tweaking, and all that data that you described coming in. That's just going to affect the performance and how successful you are. But even if you're doing something as basic or simple as an over excavation, you know, you've got to be really smart about it, and really, you can't just draw it up on paper and say, okay, I think we've got 500 tons. You got to be ready to get out there and see field conditions change. And all of a sudden there's a lens or a free product pocket in the subsurface that you didn't expect, that you didn't anticipate encountering. Man, you got to be ready to whatever data the site is giving you, you got to be ready to respond to that and make sure you can, like you said, optimize your approach.
That's exactly right. And an easy example of that, you know, we've installed and operated hundreds of ozone sparge systems, basically using that ambient air, converting it to ozone, and then treating the hydrocarbons in situ. So there's nothing being brought to the surface like you would have with a dual phase system. There's no treatment done in the box before it's discharged under air and water permits, strictly being done in the subsurface. So what we like to do, at least on a monthly basis, we'll look at other parameters in the groundwater. So it's easy to go out there and say, well, I've got a pressure radius of influence of this surrounding my sparge points. We also like to take that a little bit further, and we'll typically look at dissolved oxygen and oxidation reduction potential and see how that looks in a subsurface. Because you may have low pressure in one particular area, but your DO and your ORP could be dramatically high, which tells us that that ozone is reaching out further. And it just gives us another data set to look at. Conversely, we may have, let's just say you have a monitoring well that's within 10, 15 feet of a sparge point, but the DO ORP numbers are extremely low. Well, that could mean that that sparge point is not functioning as it should be. Sometimes scaling will occur. We'll have to address that with a rehab. Or there could just be such a dramatic mass of contamination in there, we can increase our sparge time in that particular area to see those changes by the time we're out there for the next O&M visit. So it's key to use any indicator that you can get your hands on to make sure that we have that system functioning like it should be. You know, anybody can go out there and take readings and have good runtime and make that look good in a report. But the reality of it is, if the site is not moving closer to closure, it's not what we want to see. So we always have to be adaptable. And I think our team does an excellent job from top to bottom of paying attention to the details. It's critical.
And Michael, I've got a very simple mind, as you well know, and it's always made sense to me that if you had a four-year remediation approach at a site and you had $500,000 budget, but your system is only able to run half the time, very inefficient, what you've done is you've essentially, you know, very likely doubled your runtime from 4 years to 8 years, and you'll blow that $500 budget. And so you're going to cost the client time and money. And so that's why it's so important to have these things run, you know, 90%+ efficient in the field.
That's exactly right. And something I'll add to that is, when you get in a situation where it's taking much longer than anticipated, well, that equipment is aging. So your maintenance cost and maintenance labor is going to go up dramatically. You know, everything has a life cycle, even if you take care of it as best you can. So that's another unintended cost of extending the life of the cleanup, is you're going to start replacing pumps and motors. You could potentially have other components failing. So just like an old car that you don't want to get rid of, you got to spend money to make it function. So, you know, our objective is always to do our best to get off the site as quickly as possible.
Man, absolutely. Absolutely. So another thing, Michael, and I think this is something, it certainly excites me, I think it excites you, but even though they've been around a while in the frame of a, you know, 20+ year career, horizontal wells and being able to horizontally extract contamination across the site, that's been a game changer. Don't you agree?
Oh, 100%. You know, we've been able to effectively use horizontal recovery wells on multiple locations. And not only is it typically less disruptive to site activities, it can get you in locations where you couldn't with the vertical wells. Technology has advanced dramatically in the horizontal drilling field. And these guys that we use on our team, they're very precise, very exact with their locations, and you can really target areas that you couldn't get to in the past. So it makes a huge difference.
And so, that is exciting. And one last thing I want to add for our listeners out there is, you look at a site, the mass of contaminant, if you design your remediation system correctly, and the site responds as anticipated, you got all your chemistry data, all your pneumatic data, everything's there, and you hit it right, you'll likely take probably 90%+ of the mass out well inside the first year. It's that last 10%, 5%, 3% that gets so madly difficult and extended on a time frame.
That's right. It is not uncommon to see a lot of sites that way. Unfortunately, over the last several years, we've been getting regulatory buy-in with using two different types of remediation technology, either concurrently or having the next approach in line, ready to go when you get that 90% done. A perfect example, and I know we do this a good bit out of our Louisiana offices, we may install a dual-phase vacuum extraction system, and at the same time, since we're already being a little bit disruptive on the site, we'll go ahead and install the infrastructure for ozone sparging. Ozone sparging is works exceptionally well when you've got to get down to near water quality standards. The dual phase system can come in and take a big chunk of that mass out, but it typically takes longer to get down to those almost MCL standards. So with the ozone technology, as long as you can make contact, it's simple stoichiometry, it's going to dissolve those hydrocarbons. So yeah, we've been fortunate enough to be able to use both technologies concurrently and really reduce the amount of time that we have to be on site.
Michael, man, this has been a fun swim. It, man, getting in the operations and maintenance and how sites respond. I know our listeners have enjoyed this one. I really appreciate you making time to talk about this topic. And if our listeners out there want additional information, you just want to contact us, is go to our website, ppmco.com. There's a contact us form. Reach out to Michael or myself. We'll be happy to follow up with you and talk specifics and details and handle questions with your thoughts and inputs. We really appreciate you tuning into this podcast. Michael, any last thoughts on making sure that you're getting the most out of your remediation systems?
I would just reiterate what we talked about earlier. It's just, you know, you've got to have intent with these systems. You know, the intent has to be there, and then you have to execute. So it's critical to make sure the data you're receiving is good. And it's also equally important to react on that data as quickly as possible.
Man, so well said. Absolutely fantastic information, Michael. Thanks so much for joining us today. This is, of course, Michael Elson is our expert today. Todd Perry, thank you for tuning in. This is PPM Simplifies.
Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.